The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties, with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, "Has the beer bubble burst? The craft beer industry surged in North Carolina over the past decade. Now, times are tougher." And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, "Brood Awakening, Wave of Bankruptcy Filings Ripples Through Triangle Craft Breweries." And this is written by Kay Tracy. 6 months after starting Ponysaurus Brewing, Nick Hawthorne Johnston had a revelation. He wasn't in the beer business. He was in the manufacturing business, running a small factory, quote, making a biologically unstable product, unquote. He thinks he lucked out, given the fact that this was 2013 and he was one of the few breweries in Durham. He had time to adjust to the learning curve. Now, in 2025, it's a different story. "It's a tough business, and in the last 10 years, breweries have been popping up like mushrooms," Hawthorne Johnston said. "Yet economic unease, increased competition, changing customer tastes, and other factors are causing significant problems for brewers. Nationally, the Brewers Association tracked more brew pub closures, 189, than openings, 167, for the first time in a number of years. North Carolina, ranked seventh in the country with 430 breweries, has not been immune to national trends. Last year, the NC Craft Brewers Guild saw more breweries close, 25, than open, 24, in the state. North Carolina brewery owners have lamented how aluminum and grain prices could increase the cost of beer by a dollar for four packs and six packs, and at a convenience store in Hendersonville, six packs of craft beer came without a price tag because of price fluctuations. Seltzers, THC drinks, and non-alcoholic beverages are giving consumers more options than ever, crowding grocery store shelves and squeezing brewers' thin margins even tighter. If you want to make a small fortune, start with a big fortune and open a brewery," Hawthorne Johnston said. Financial struggles loom. Havoc Brewing Company in downtown Pittsburgh opened in 2023 with 235 seats, and it was quickly a success. Michael Pipkin, founder and master brewer, hit his estimated sales projections of about 700 barrels his first year in business. That equals 3 barrels of beer per seat. "It helped that we have an amazing location. We won an award our first year for one of our IPAs. We had everything going for us," Pipkin said. But Havoc ran into financial trouble when construction took longer than expected, forcing the brewery to dip into its working capital to cover rent payments, plus interest rates started going up. Pipkin filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy reorganization in April. After the notoriously slow months of January, he called the dry January movement such a pain in February. Havoc burned through its reserve capital during those cold winter months. By the time spring rolled around, Pipkin was running out of options. The brewery took out a $1.46 million Small Business Association loan from Celtic Bank of Salt Lake City with a 6.5% interest rate that shot up to nearly 11.5%. That's the difference between an $18,000 monthly payment and a $22,500 monthly payment, Pipkin said. "Doing it over again, I would look for alternative financing. I think I would look for more cash investment. I would look for a better overall debt-to-income structure," he said. Havoc wasn't the only brewery facing challenges last spring. In April, Brewprint Brewing in Cary filed for Chapter 7 liquidation and later closed. Cotton House Craft Brewers in downtown Cary filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy reorganization and plans to stay open. Even in the small town of Farmville in eastern North Carolina, the once thriving Duck Rabbit Craft Brewery closed in April after filing for Chapter 7 liquidation. Bankruptcy filings showed that Duck Rabbit's revenue declined by 26% from 2023 to 2024, from $577,219 in 2023 to $427,086 last year. Cotton House had $400,000 in SBA loans in its bankruptcy filings. Brewprint owed the SBA $257,400, and Duck Rabbit owed $532,800, according to their filings. If you're operating on thin margins and your traffic takes a seasonal dip during colder months, that might be enough to make or break some of these smaller operations, and they just can't survive that, said Byron Sainting, a partner at law firm Smith Debnam, Naren Drake, Sainting and Myers, who focuses on bankruptcy cases. Sainting noted that business bankruptcies have been on the downward trend for several years, despite a handful of more recent Triangle business bankruptcies. He said SBA loans are a factor for breweries getting sideways financially. For these small businesses, if you don't really read the fine print and you don't understand that you can be looking at those kind of increases over the span of 18 to 24 months, that's tough, Sainting said. Havoc is doing everything it can to squeeze revenue out of its 9,000 square foot space. It added a coffee bar that brings in about 5% in sales, and Pipkin is considering subleasing space to a food operator. The brewery brings in live music and has a consistent rotation of food trucks. And as Chatham County awaits explosive growth thanks to the coming Disney-backed Asteria residential neighborhood community and other developments, Havoc is also in a bit of a holding pattern. Growth in Chatham County would be growth for Havoc Brewing Company. We just can't wait that long, so we're having to shift some of the focus to do a few other things at the moment, Pipkin said. The path to distribution. Hawthorne Johnson said that between the tiny small-batch neighborhood brewery and the successful large-scale beer distributor lies a metaphoric desert. There's so much infrastructure and sales wherewithal that a brewery needs to make it big through distribution. Getting across that desert, I think a lot of breweries sort of perish, Hawthorne Johnson said. Douglas Rose with Empire Distributors of Raleigh started distributing Havoc's beer in May. So far, he has 53 accounts with bars and restaurants and 32 accounts with grocery stores and convenience stores. Pipkin called distribution the only way forward for Havoc. Rose said Empire started working with North Carolina breweries over the past year and a half, including Havoc, Clouds Brewing, Monday Night Brewing, Lenny Boy Brewing Company, and Broomtail Craft Brewery in Wilmington. Prior to that, Empire did not have a Triangle Market beer presence. We have a hole in our portfolio that these products fit really nicely into, Rose said. Production has doubled at Havoc since it began distributing through Empire. We've seen steady revenue of about $30,000 in wholesale revenue for the last couple of months, which has been awesome. It's helped to offset some variability in taproom sales, Pipkin said. Meanwhile, the taproom has seen an average of $70,000 to $80,000 in revenue over the last few months. While pursuing distribution is difficult, running the other side of the business, a vibrant taproom, can prove just as challenging. Because they straddle the line between needing a combination of industrial and retail restaurant real estate, breweries often find themselves as the catalyst for redevelopment. It's a common scenario all over the country that breweries can be victims of their own success. A brewery opens in part of town that's transitioning out of its industrial era, and suddenly customers and foot traffic increase. More restaurants and retail businesses open in close proximity, so do apartments and sometimes office space. Then, 5 or 10 years later, when it's time for a brewery to renew its lease, the real estate has become so valuable that breweries are suddenly priced out. For example, Full Steam Brewery in Durham, a brewery that played a pivotal role in establishing the Triangle's craft beer industry, saw its rent in downtown Durham triple last year, forcing the business to close that location and go a different direction. The brewery now has a location at Box Yard RTP and plans to open at the American Tobacco campus next year. It's also planning to bring a brewery and tap room to Rocky Mount. We've seen rents go up 300%, and that is just not part of anybody's feasible business plan to accommodate that level of additional expense, said Lisa Parker, executive director of the North Carolina Craft Brewers Guild. What consumers want. Niall Hanley is not a brewer, but he remains the man with perhaps the most taps of beer in Raleigh, and he has noticed changes based on which of the 350-plus taps his customers are choosing at the Raleigh Beer Garden in Glenwood South, as well as at Hibernian Irish Pub and Restaurant. A few years ago, the trends were leaning toward hoppy beers. Now, beer drinkers are choosing more traditional beers, lagers, Guinness, and Pilsners. Even female college students are seeking out pints of Guinness at Hibernian, he said. Whitsett-based Red Oak Brewery near Greensboro is a high seller, and it was founded more than 30 years ago. Hanley believes too many breweries opened and now the market is trying to right itself. He also thinks the kind of beer that breweries have chosen to make is part of the problem. Microbreweries were too creative and they flavored themselves out, Hanley said. There has to be a conscious decision. Are we going to win the awards or go mainstream and win an audience? What remains true is people still love beer. Hanley is not seeing any trend of people drinking less, at least not right now. We're seeing very high demand. It's as busy as it ever was, thank God, he said. Katie Ells, brewery production manager at Brewery Bavana, invoices Brewery Bavana's new Fenton restaurant for beer just as she does for the brewery's downtown location. She said that the Fenton location is buying just as much as the downtown location, and it's half the size. Our sales are not being impacted by people buying less beer, she said. Her mantra is that the beer has to be good. If it tastes good, customers will return. I've always thought the beer speaks for itself, Elle said. Looking for bright spots. Parker recently traveled to Indianapolis for the National Brewers Association conference and described the mood at the conference, despite the challenges breweries around the country are facing, as one of renewed energy and excitement. She noted that the business models, scales, and structures of North Carolina breweries are so varied that it's hard to draw a through line when they close or face bankruptcy. Breweries are fighting for success in an uncertain economy where customers don't spend as much and where grocery shelves are more competitive than ever. Smaller breweries with less distribution and brand power are hardest hit right now, she said. Parker said the more options and flavor profiles a brewery can have, the better. We're seeing positive growth trends in the industry around companies that have more diversified offerings for customers, she said. A handful of new breweries are still popping up. Crooked Hammock Brewery celebrated its Raleigh groundbreaking. Odin Brewing Company opened in Wilmington recently. Aviator Brewing has opened its new location in Fuquay Arena. Trophy Brewing's team opened the Bend Bar. And Trophy is opening its new Five Points location this fall. And 10 North Carolina breweries brought home awards for the World Beer Cup this spring, ranking the state 7th in the country. But the industry is not going to look the same as it did in 2017. Breweries are smart and innovative and scrappy, and we're going to see them repositioning themselves moving forward with all sorts of different business models, Parker said. Eels said breweries can improve just like any other business option. Compass Rose Brewery in Northeast Raleigh, for example, brought on new brewers who are now producing amazing beer, she said. Hawthorne Johnson also said that residents of the Triangle have a responsibility in keeping their favorite establishments, whether breweries, restaurants, or bars, afloat. My hope is that diners remember that where they spend their money makes a difference in what remains in their community, he said. For Pipkin and other brewers, for example, of Gizmo Brew Works, going through bankruptcy last year and emerging out the other side has been a shining example amid the challenges. I grew up in a world where bankruptcy was a shameful kind of event. Watching Gizmo be able to navigate their way through that to a place of success, that was enough for me to kind of swallow that shame, Pipkin said, of going through bankruptcy. Pipkin said the Pittsburgh community remains supportive of Havoc as it awaits the explosive growth happening in Chatham County. The prevailing reaction originally was, please tell me y'all aren't closing, and we're not, he said. We're fighting like hell to stay open. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Dane Huffman. And our first headline, booming Fuquay to add bowling, more at new venue. Dentist plans 42,000 square foot entertainment concept with restaurant bar. Back in 2008, Dr. Bryden McCormick was fresh out of dental school at UNC Chapel Hill and opened a new practice in the small town of Fuquay Arena. Day one, I had zero patients, he said. But he passed out flyers, and before long, McCormick said the phone just rang off the hook. He and his wife, Kristen, settled in Fuquay Arena right as the town was set to explode. Now McCormick has a new venture, opening an entertainment venue that's nothing like what the town has seen. McWally's will span 42,000 square feet and will include bowling, laser tag, a restaurant bar, around 45 televisions, and private party rooms. I always liked bowling as a kid growing up. I thought bowling would be a great addition to the town, said McCormick, who grew up in Santa Cruz, California. I've got four kids, and there's nowhere to take your family and kids in Fuquay for birthday parties, fun activities for the kids to do. So I started thinking a bowling alley would be awesome in Fuquay. McCormick majored in economics before going to dental school. He still practices, but has dabbled in other ventures, such as investing in real estate in recent years. The idea for an entertainment complex began to take shape 5 years ago, and a feasibility study showed its potential. What started out as a $10 million project ballooned to $20 million as costs and interest rates rose, but McCormick forged, backed by a group of local investors, forged ahead and is now looking to hire around 100 people to open in August. He projects an annual revenue stream of around $7 million. The name McWally's is a play on his wife's maiden name, Wallingford, and a big bet on the future of Fuquay, where options for entertainment are limited. The location is great, McCormick said. Meredith College to cut staff 6% as it looks to balance budget. Meredith College in Raleigh has slashed jobs ahead of the 2025-26 academic year. The school did not provide an exact number, but the Women's College on Hillsborough Street said the cuts include about 25 employees and were needed to align staffing levels with the college's current and future operational needs. Spokesperson Melissa Allen said the cuts were across various departments and no departments were eliminated. The cuts come as many schools, especially smaller ones, face enrollment declines. Garner Building sells for a whopping price. The price of poker is going up in Garner. A one-story building near the intersection of the NC-42 and I-40 has sold for millions. Carobella Properties, an LLC that lists Dr. Timothy Sims of Sims Family Dentistry at 52 Glen Road, Suite 104 in Garner as a member, bought the 8,208-square-foot building his practice operates out of at 52 Glen Road for $2.17 million last month, according to Johnston County deed records. Property records indicate the building came online in 2001. The dentist office has been open in the area since 2002. ACC Leader supports sharing sports betting dollars in North Carolina. ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips is in favor of proposals in the North Carolina General Assembly that would distribute between $12.1 million and $24.4 million to UNC Chapel Hill and NC State University for athletics. The state's two other ACC members, Duke University and Wake Forest University, are excluded because they are private schools. Listen, investment in higher education and athletics, I am for, Phillips told the Charlotte Business Journal. I just am. Every state has to do what they think is right, but I commend the state of North Carolina for looking at it in that way and trying to support those two institutions. And finally, Glenwood South Bar to close. One of Raleigh's more lively bars is closing. Cornerstone Tavern, located at 603 Glenwood Avenue in three separate houses, is closing this weekend after 13 unforgettable years. We're deeply thankful to everyone who made Cornerstone a part of Raleigh's story, the announcement read on social media. New development is coming to Glenwood South. In 2021, Blue Ridge Realty submitted plans for an 11-story residential building and a 12-story office tower at the corner of Glenwood Avenue and Johnston Street. Originally, the project's completion date was 2024, but the developer later scrapped the office component of the project. Plans still appear to be in the works for the project. Blue Ridge Realty owns the Cornerstone Tavern buildings, which date back to 1905 and 1907. And now we turn to the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one, written by Kaylee Thompson, Kane Realty to refile for North Hills Towers. Developer pulled plans in 2023 after concerns over traffic congestion. Kane Realty Corporation is getting ready to refile a previously contentious rezoning request for more height in the North Hills Main District. Kane Realty is hosting a community open house on July 30 regarding rezoning six parcels on Six Forks Road and Lassiter Mill Road. The developer is looking to go from 5 and 12 stories to 12, 20, and 40 stories, but with a height limit of 37 stories. Previously, residents pushed back due to concerns over traffic and higher prices. Kane Realty pulled the application in March 2023. Now, a little more than 2 years later, the developer is hosting a neighborhood meeting with plans to refile in August. However, the main difference between now and 2021's application is that the density and square footage is lower. The heights sought are significant. For example, the Eastern Tower at North Hills is 36 stories. Kate Walker, director of development with Kane, said the company wants to address those traffic congestion concerns by offering a condition that keeps the number of residential units and amount of commercial space at what is allowed under the current zoning. The number of units and square footage allowed would stay the same. We're just proposing to redistribute that allowance into taller buildings, and that additional height will give us more flexibility to create more meaningful open spaces and street-level activation, Walker said. The six parcels are 4359 and 4421 Six Forks Road, the Exxon gas station and Total Wine areas, 4270 The Circle at North Hill Street, which are parking lots, 4220 Lassiter Mill Road, a Wells Fargo bank, an unaddressed parcel on Lassiter Mill Road, an empty lot next to Interstate 440, and an unaddressed parcel on Rowan Street, the retail building behind Total Wine. The previous rezoning was also 30 stories instead of 20. Addressing that traffic congestion became even more difficult when the city of Raleigh announced it would stop the Six Forks Road widening project. New York developers scale back Nash Square condo tower. Project will be reduced from 36 stories to 20 and become boutique offering. This is also written by Kaylee Thompson. A highly anticipated condominium tower in downtown Raleigh has been downgraded from 36 stories to 20. A vacant lot adjacent to the former Berkeley Cafe and across from Nash Square was set to become a 36-story luxury residential tower with a parking deck. However, after the increase in interest rates and deciding to create a boutique offering, owner Alchemy Properties South decreased the height. Alchemy Properties South will now develop 82 for-sale condos with 5,500 square feet of ground floor retail as opposed to the originally proposed 403 rental and for sale units with 7,431 square feet of ground floor retail. The way the deal was originally structured, the sales proceeds from the condos were going to reduce the basis in the building. We always thought that it was a very strong hypothesis and it was going to really work. When interest rates crept up a little bit, we realized that the returns that we were seeking were not in line with what we want and what the interest rate environment was going to allow, Kenneth Horn, president of Alchemy Properties, told Triangle Business Journal. So it was a combination of that and the fact that we looked at what was maybe like a 600,000, 700,000 square foot building, and we took a deep breath and said, let's do something that's a bit more in scale, a little bit more boutique, he said. Listing prices for the residences will start at $795,000 with options from 1 to 4 bedrooms. The tower will be called One Nash Square and will have views of downtown Raleigh. Amenities offered include a swimming pool with deck, spa, fitness center, indoor pickleball court, pet spa, and meeting rooms. The developer sees Nash Square as an amenity for the tower as well along with the other walkable offerings in the area. The tower will be at 303 South Dawson Street with the entrance to the parking deck at 217 West Martin Street, which housed Berkeley Cafe. That will be torn down for this project. The Dawson Street property was rezoned for 40 stories in 2022, while the Martin Street property is zoned for 20. And our final top news story, Forgotten Airport gets new life in Wake County. An overlooked airport near Fuquay Varina now has big hopes for the future. And this is written by Lauren Onasorge. Entrepreneur Mark Saad was at Raleigh-Durham International Airport waiting for his flight when he got the call. Do you want to buy an airport? Hell yeah, he remembers thinking. Saad, a real estate investor and co-founder of footwear firm Feel Goods, has zero experience in aviation. He is not a pilot, nor does his resume include any stints in airport management. But he and his co-investors, construction veterans Ryan Stone and Marty Williams, leapt at the chance to buy the old Triple W Airport in Fuquay Varina. And they're banking on getting the Triangle Elite to park their planes on its renovated airfield. On a sunny day in July, Saad took TBJ on a tour of the revamped airstrip, now known as Southern Wake Regional Air Park. The facility is only seeing a few flights a day now, but Syed is confident it will take off, not just as a business venture, but also as an economic development driver for the Triangle. Syed and his partners bought the airstrip last October for $1.4 million. Since then, Syed estimates they've funneled $3 million into the airport, and it shows. When he first visited the airport, Syed said the grass was 6 feet tall and the runway was in sad shape. Grass was growing in the cracks, said Mattia Williams, airport director. When Syed flew in with a friend for the first time, they noticed with alarm how the runway snaked to the right. We knew it was a ton of work, he said, but we knew that it would pay off. The effort has been grueling. In addition to obvious tasks such as repaving and weed whacking, they've added lights to the airstrip, which they widened to 55 feet and lengthened to 4,000 feet, enough to accommodate turboprops. They've repainted the building, installed new flooring and added fencing, and they've excavated what was left behind by the decades, antique fuel pumps, hand-drawn site plans, even an actual airplane the team found in the woods. The team had a 6,000-gallon jet fuel truck, and within weeks will have a 12,000-gallon tank. They also installed a 30-stall bathroom facility, which was trucked in from a construction site in Virginia. Flooding was a persistent issue at the old airstrip, so in addition to the 55-acre airport, the team purchased the adjacent 22 acres, which includes the Culprit Creek. Syed said they cleared out brush and downed trees from the nearby waterway, something that's already made a difference, evidenced by the fact that the airstrip stayed dry during recent storms. I don't think we ever doubted it, Syed said of the overall plan. But I think once we saw it cleared, that's when it was an inflection point. We were like, this is really going to be something special. Fuquay Varina Mayor Blake Messengill calls it an exciting opportunity for people to visit Southern Wake County and see what we have to offer. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the reporter pages, beginning with Lauren Onasorge's page, Finance and Transportation. Pinnacle CEO still targeting Raleigh. Turner says one path to growth is to attract talented people with strong books. 8 years after completing its acquisition of BNC Bank Corp, the parent of Bank of North Carolina, Pinnacle Financial Partners continues aggressive recruitment efforts in the Triangle region and beyond. The Tennessee-based bank, which established a Triangle presence with its $1.9 billion acquisition of BNC in 2017, continues to recruit revenue producers from other institutions. This approach is central to its growth strategy, which focuses on urban markets like Raleigh without acquiring other banks as it expands. We're trying to build a high-growth bank, CEO Terry Turner said in an interview. You can't build a high-growth bank in small, no-growth markets. Turner said Raleigh in particular is attractive. A lot of the institutions who have market share have been giving it up, he said. Turner said recruiting talent rather than acquiring it through mergers is paying off. Last year, the bank hired more than 160 revenue producers across its footprint who can move their books quickly. I'm not sure how big of a bank you'd have to buy to pick up 161 revenue producers, but you'd have to buy a pretty big bank, he said, calling M&A a much higher risk, lower gain strategy. Not that he wouldn't consider the right bank under the right terms, but it's not in the immediate cards, he said. So far this year, the bank has hired 71 revenue producers, putting it on pace to do it all again. Turner said there's still plenty of uncertainty in the market, but he's seeing an underlying optimism. There's a belief that generally most things feel fundamentally good to business owners, but the uncertainty, particularly around tariffs, just sort of causes them to put the clutch in and wait and see before they really start to take on more risks, he said. Cornerstone named Smith new CEO to replace Lee. Cornerstone Building Brands has named its new CEO, Gunnar Smith, formerly of building products manufacturer Owens Corning. In Smith's new role, he will have a base salary of nearly $1.1 million, not including bonuses, and he's also entitled to a signing bonus worth nearly $1.5 million, according to a disclosure Cornerstone published July 21. Smith replaces Rose Lee, the previous CEO of Cornerstone. Lee resigned in March to focus on a personal family matter. John Krenicki, chairman of the board, had taken on the interim CEO slot while the board worked with a search firm to seek out a permanent replacement. Lee became CEO after Jim Metcalf retired in 2021. Smith is a familiar name to some in the local industry, as he previously served as national sales manager for Plygem Industries. Cornerstone used to be a public company, selling to Clayton, Dublier, and Rice in a $5.8 billion deal in 2022. At the time, Cornerstone had more than 20,000 total employees. Cornerstone had revenue of $5.3 billion in 2024. It now has 18,800 employees company-wide, 225 of whom are in the Triangle. Cornerstone manufactures exterior building products and serves residential and commercial customers. Whitewater Raleigh becomes a real possibility. The Texas real estate company looking to develop a former section of Lake Crabtree County Park into an entertainment destination along Interstate 40 has envisioned a concept it calls Whitewater Raleigh. The Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority on July 17 said it is working with Pacific Elm Properties to develop more than 100 acres into an outdoor complex. Pacific Elm Properties is the real estate venture of Carolina Hurricanes owner Tom Dundon that's also behind Raleigh's Sports and Entertainment District. The Dallas firm, in its initial pitch to the Airport Authority, said it could help the region capitalize on the surging interest in outdoor recreation by developing a whitewater park. The initial proposal, submitted in response to the Airport Authority's request for information, detailed how the U.S. Whitewater Center in Charlotte had 1.3 million annual visitors and generated more than $30 million in revenue. Major traffic shift coming to Durham. Durham's Roxborough and Mangum streets are about to undergo a transformation that will convert them to two-way traffic. It's a safety play, city officials say, as these types of conversions have been shown to slow traffic and reduce crashes. However, they can also slow commutes, which is why state officials are monitoring the project closely. It's a deceptively complex project, says Becca Gallus, division engineer with the North Carolina Department of Transportation. When you first think about this project, you think, oh, we just restripe it. But it's really more than that, she said. You have to think about, how do these connecting streets tie in? How does this affect the overall traffic network? And now we turn to the real estate and development page. This is written by Kaylee Thompson. Creamery project begins in earnest. City issues demolition permits as Turnbridge begins to transform site. After years of delays, the Creamery development in Glenwood South is set to start construction. The City of Raleigh issued demolition permits to Turnbridge Equities of New York for the site at 410 Glenwood Avenue on July 1st. Fencing has been placed around the part of the building that will be demolished, which doesn't include the historic portion with Sullivan Steakhouse. Site and infrastructure work permits are ready to be issued to the developer. Jason Davis, managing director for Turnbridge, said demolition will start in August and will take about 1 month to complete. An official construction start date has not been shared. We just figured it would make sense for us to go ahead and start prepping the site, Davis said. The redevelopment project has been in the works for years. Originally, construction was supposed to start in 2022, but it has been pushed back multiple times. The Ark Royal and Pine State Public House closed last November after Turnbridge told the businesses they would lose access to their space. Tenants in the apartments on the south and east sides of the building have vacated, along with all the retail tenants on the east side of the building facing Northwest Street. Phase one of construction will be Highline Glenwood, a 37-story residential tower with 306 units. 16 of those units will be penthouses. It will also have 7,500 square feet of retail space and an outdoor plaza connecting the historic portion and the new high-rise tower. The rest of the development will be the 20-story office building called 404 Glenwood at the Creamery. Pre-leasing for the office space started in July 2023. Davis didn't have a percentage of pre-leasing to share, but said it is still ongoing. Builder eyes Northeast Raleigh for hundreds of homes. A prolific home builder is eyeing growing Northeast Raleigh for its next residential community. Mungo Homes has filed a rezoning application with the city for 142 acres between the Neuse River and Interstate 540. The home builder is requesting to rezone 5 parcels to residential 10, which would allow for up to 10 dwelling units per acre. At 142 acres, that would be up to 1,420 residential units. Residential 10 also allows for duplexes and townhomes in addition to single-family homes. The property on Tar Heel Club Road, south of Buffalo Road Athletic Park, is presently zoned Agriculture Productive, Conservation Management, and Residential 4. Matt Kaufman, vice president of sales for Mungo Home, said it will be a for-sale community and that the home builder chose the location because it is an up-and-coming area. An adjacent 76-acre site on Tar Heel Club Road is also up for rezoning to allow for 236 residential units. Northeast of the site is where a Publix-anchored shopping center is being built, and hundreds of apartments and thousands of homes are planned for the area. In the rezoning request, Mungo Homes is offering one condition, that outdoor sports and entertainment facilities be prohibited as a principal use. Concept 8 joins with Florida firm on new homes. Concept 8 Holdings of Apex is partnering with Lennar of Miami for more than 70 homes in Northeast Raleigh. Concept 8 has acquired 78 lots for $4.6 million, according to Wake County deed records. The lots are off Skycrest Drive, just east of Traywick Road. Records show a deed of trust between Lennar and Concept 8 for the lots. It's very difficult for us as a smaller local home builder to compete with these big national home builders in terms of true cost, said Johnny Chappell of Concept 8. If one of those groups is interested in a site that we have control over, it makes sense for us to have those conversations with the national home builder to see if we can work out a deal that works for both parties. Because at the end of the day, it's not a fair fight if we go in and try to compete with the national home builder on townhome sales. And finally, Atlanta buyer snags apartments in Knightdale. A new apartment complex in Knightdale has been sold. Centennial Holding Company of Atlanta acquired the Element at the Grove Apartments for $57.5 million, according to Wake County deed records. But according to John Michaels of JLL, who represented the seller, the actual price was $73 million, as the deed transaction did not include certain items associated with the property that were also sold, but left out of the deed for tax purposes. The property's assessed value is $66.5 million. The complex, located off Roseville Road across from East Wake Magnet High School, was completed in 2024 and is 95% leased. Red Clay Development Partners and Windsor Commercial developed the project, and Red Clay sold it to Centennial. And now we turn to the Greater Triangle page. This one is written by Ben Tobin. Full steam to open in Rocky Mount. Durham Brewer to launch in Rocky Mount Mills with 12,000 square foot site. One of the Triangle's biggest names in craft beer is heading east to open a new brewery and tap room. Full Steam Brewery, which got its start in downtown Durham in 2010, has begun moving its operations into the Rocky Mount Brew Mill at Rocky Mount Mills, according to owner Sean Lilly Wilson. The move follows Wilson's decision to close Full Steam's longstanding operation at 726 Rigsby Avenue in Durham and open a new tap room at American Tobacco Campus. Wilson said he first looked at the Rocky Mount site in 2013 to figure out whether it could be a home for a large regional brewery that was considering expanding, he said. Instead, the site became home to the Brew Mill, which launched in 2017 as North Carolina's first craft beer incubator. Many years later, we started winding down our Durham operation, and we wanted to have a place for small batch brewing, Wilson said. So the incubator model worked well for us as we were in this transition, and a few months ago we had an epiphany of, wait a minute, could this be more than just us using it on occasion? Full Steam signed a 10-year lease of the 12,000-square-foot brew mill site and will manage it, according to Wilson. As part of the transition, Full Steam is retaining the previous brew mill manager, Austin Myrick, who will serve as Full Steam's director of brewery operations for Rocky Mount. We need to have a brewery location, Wilson said. We can't be a virtual brand, so this just kind of was a bit fortuitous in terms of mutual fit and need, and it also just really allows us a lot more creativity and flexibility. Full Steam will produce around 5,000 to 6,000 barrels per year of its year-round beers through a contract with Noda Brewing in Charlotte. The Rocky Mount facility will produce an additional 1,000 barrels, Wilson said. Sanford to add more housing and retail. A mixed-use development in Sanford is hoping to attract tech workers by providing a plethora of housing and retail. Lauren Dixon, the director of landscape architecture for Charlotte's American Engineering, submitted plans this month to the Sanford-Lee County Broadway Technical Review Committee for Cumnock West, that's C-U-M-N-O-C-K, West, a roughly 82-acre development situated within the 400-acre village of Cumnock conditional zoning district that was approved a few years ago. The land was annexed into Sanford in 2021. The site for Cumnock Village sits along Cumnock Road to the east, Highway 421 to the south, and the Deep River to the west. Features of the Cumnock West proposal include 322 multifamily housing units, apartments and condominiums, 376 rooms for hospitality, and 130,100 square feet of single-story retail. The land is owned by Village of Cumnock, LLC, which lists Holly Springs resident Michael Mazzella as a member. With the quickening pace of the Sanford Area Growth Alliance's high-tech industrial recruitment successes in Lee County, my clients felt it was good timing for them to begin to plan the pieces that they could contribute to the emergence of North Sanford, Dixon said. Chapel Hill investors buy Roxborough facility. A Chapel Hill couple with a history of real estate investments has bought a large industrial facility just miles away from the North Carolina-Virginia border. DLT Holdings, which lists David and Louise Sue, that's T-S-U-I, as members in Secretary of State filings, bought the roughly 343,000 square foot property at 1000 North Park Drive in Roxborough for $4.25 million last month, according to Person County deed records. Boise Cascade Wood Products, an Idaho manufacturer of building materials, bought the property in 2016 for a little over $5 million. The facility closed in March 2020 and has sat vacant. Next door is another large manufacturing site housing Spuntech Industries, which makes nonwoven fabrics. The couple's other commercial real estate investments include the former Sears building at Triangle Town Center in Raleigh. In 2016, they bought the Burlington Outlet Village Shopping Center, according to reports at the time. And finally, large mixed-use project plan for Chatham County. New plans for a prime property in Chatham County reveal a 300-plus acre mixed-use community. Farrington Land Holdings, an LLC with ties to the Joe Williams Land Bank Fund of Austin, Texas, purchased 370 acres off Parker Herndon Road and Andrew Store Road, south of Briar Chapel, in March. The firm paid around $15 million for seven parcels. JW Development partner Richard Gary recently shared the plans for what he called the Farrington Preserve project on LinkedIn. The project will be a 336-acre master planned community with single-family, townhome, and commercial sites, it read. He also said JW Development would be working with a national builder. And Lauren Rhodes contributed that last article. And the next reporter page is Zach Ezone's page on healthcare and life sciences. Morrisville wins new headquarters. German company to invest $10 million in new facility on McCrimmon Parkway. A German biotechnology company is setting up its U.S. headquarters in the Triangle. Coriolis Pharma, that's C-O-R-I-O-L-I-S, Pharma, plans to invest $10 million to establish a research laboratory at the large Spark LS Life Sciences campus near McCrimmon Parkway in Morrisville. The company plans to create 50 jobs at the facility. The German contract research and development organization will occupy about 13,000 square feet for its new facility, which will be its first laboratory in the U.S. The company anticipates beginning operations at the site in first quarter 2026. As a contract organization, Coriolis provides drug product development services across various therapeutic modalities. The company is selecting Morrisville as its location because of the Triangle's scientific ecosystem and the proximity to other life sciences companies, Coriolis CEO Sylvia Steyer-Gruber said in a statement. The investment in a new lab in Morrisville is a significant milestone for Coriolis, Steyer-Gruber said. With our future presence in North Carolina, we will be able to serve our North American clients even better, offering our core services quickly and efficiently on site, Trinity Capital is the developer behind Spark LS, a 108-acre, $1 billion life sciences campus of multiple buildings with laboratory and biomanufacturing space. Coriolis Pharma is the first confirmed tenant for the campus. Spark LS is across the street from Pathway Triangle, another large life sciences campus developed by King Street Properties. Pathway Triangle also recently secured its first tenant, with Liquidia recently signing a lease to occupy almost 70,000 square feet. The population of Morrisville has steadily grown from around 5,000 people in the year 2000 to around 32,000 now. To support that growth, the town has a vision for a new downtown that will be a destination for people who live in and around the town. Biogen investing $2 billion more in RTP. One of North Carolina's largest biotechnology companies is expanding its operations with a $2 billion investment. Biogen, over the next few years, plans to invest in multiple modalities and factories across the company's two campuses in Research Triangle Park. The investment will grow the company's already large footprint in RTP, where it operates more than 1 million square feet of facilities. The company, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, says it has invested about $10 billion in its manufacturing operations in North Carolina since first beginning construction in 1995. With this investment, we will modernize and expand our manufacturing capability to enable our pipeline and provide resilient patient supply while continuing to support the skilled and dedicated community of life sciences talent in North Carolina, said Nicole Murphy, Biogen's head of pharmaceutical operations and technology, in a statement July 21. The company's investments will expand its antisense oligonucleotide capabilities and infrastructure, establish clinical and commercial fill-finish capabilities, and help the company modernize manufacturing technologies and controls through further advanced automation and artificial intelligence, according to its statement. And in Johnston County, UNC Health finalizes ownership. UNC Health has taken full ownership of its Johnston County affiliate, concluding a process that began more than a decade ago. The health system on July 1st became the sole member of Johnston Health Services Corporation after previously owning 49% of the entity. The transaction will provide UNC Health Johnston with easier access to capital. Tom Williams, CEO of UNC Health Johnston, describes the transaction as a member substitution agreement rather than an outright purchase. The health system obtained a third-party valuation of the remaining 51% stake that UNC did not control and the amount of capital needed to support various expansion efforts. We essentially come to an agreement of between that valuation and what those needs are, and then UNC promises to spend that strategic money and that capital money to allow for the growth that we have on track, Williams said. And finally, Sarepta Therapeutics cuts Durham jobs, and that's spelled Sarepta Therapeutics. A Massachusetts biotechnology firm is cutting nearly two dozen jobs in the Triangle amid a broader restructuring and pressure from federal regulators. Sarepta Therapeutics recently informed local and state officials of its plans to lay off 21 employees in Durham. This comes as the company cuts 493 jobs as it grapples with safety concerns related to one of its gene therapies. The restructuring comes about a month after Sarepta confirmed that a patient being treated with Elevidys, E-L-E-V-I-D-Y-S, a gene therapy approved for patients with Duchenne muscular dystrophy, died. This is the second patient to die from acute liver failure while taking the therapy. Both patients were non-ambulatory. And now we turn to our last reporter page. This one is written by Dane Huffman, On the Coast. Ocracoke Hotel up for auction. Silver Lake Motel, former Jolly Roger pub site, to be sold at the end of July. A prime piece of property in the heart of Ocracoke featuring a longtime motel will go up for auction July 29, a rare opportunity at a time of intense interest in the North Carolina coast. The property features the Silver Lake Motel and Inn, as well as the former site of the Jolly Roger Pub and Marina, a much-loved local watering hole that was destroyed by Hurricane Dorian in 2019. The quaint clapboard Silver Lake Motel and Inn dates to 1983 and is just across the road from Silver Lake, the body of water water that forms the heart of Ocracoke and flows east into the Pamlico Sound. Also with it comes a three-story inn and suites building that dates to 1994 and includes 16,529 square feet. The site of the Jolly Roger is right across the road and directly on the lake. Country Boys Auction and Realty of Washington is holding the auction for a court-appointed receiver, George M. Oliver, and is not a bankruptcy or foreclosure sale. The property has been owned by LLCs tied to a Virginia investor. Dewey Dunn of Country Boys Auction and Realty said the property already has a stalking horse bid of $2.8 million, and he expects the eventual price to exceed $3.5 million. There's definitely room for this property to bring more than that, he said. The total tax assessment for the five parcels is nearly $5.4 million. Dunn said bidders must be pre-approved and have proof of funds or financing. The auction will be held July 29 at 10 a.m. at Oliver's Law Office in New Bern. The Silver Lake Inn remains open under interim management. According to documents involving the case, Dogwood State Bank filed a complaint May 12 and asked the court to appoint a receiver, which was approved. In 2024, the Anchorage Inn in Ocracoke sold for $6.3 million and was turned into condos. Yacht seller in Wilmington, eyes going public. A Wilmington company aspiring to be the CarMax of the used boat industry has filed to go public. Off the Hook Yachts is a marine wholesaler that purports to transform pre-owned yachts into high-demand assets. The company filed for a $29 million initial public offering this month. The company has yet to price its shares or announce a proposed trading symbol, but it hopes to debut on the New York Stock Exchange. Founded in 2012, the company is growing quickly, capitalizing on the trend of pre-owned boat sales outpacing new boat sales. Founder Jason Rugg appears fully committed, personally guaranteeing the company's current floor plan financing with a lien on his own residence. With a successful IPO, the plan is to remove the personal guarantee, secure low-interest floor plan financing, a type of loan that allows businesses to purchase inventory, and utilize institutionally backed credit facilities to fund growth. The company is targeting $50 million or more in floor plan financing by 2026. The firm reported nearly $99 million in revenue for 2024, up from $91.8 million in 2023. It has built a network that extends beyond yacht sales. The company's network includes loan origination firm Azure Funding, acquisition brand We Buy Boats, repo service Marine Asset Recovery, and other companies. And in the fishing industry, new coalition forms to stick up for coastal region. A surprise bill in the North Carolina General Assembly that would have eliminated shrimp trawling and cost coastal communities jobs has jolted some coastal leaders into action. The chairman of the Dare County Board of Commissioners is urging coastal communities to start working together to give voice to their concerns in Raleigh. In a July 3 letter to board chairs of coastal counties, Robert Woodard said the commercial fishing industry is essential to the coastal economy and its heritage, and they should work together. He urged the formation of a new North Carolina Coastal Counties Fisheries Coalition. By coordinating our efforts, we can better advocate for the long-term health and sustainability of our fisheries, our local economies, and our way of life. The coalition plans to meet for the first time August 5th in Carteret County. And finally, Wilmington Airport continues stunning growth. Wilmington International Airport grew flights by a stunning 66% from July 1, 2022 to June 2025, according to a news release. The airport said percentage increase led the country for that period. Only the Westchester County Airport in New York was close in growth at 62%. Thank you, airline partners, for your investment in ILM. Said Airport Director Jeff Bork. The record-setting growth ILM has experienced, now 39 months in a row, is a testament to what is a strong business market and growing leisure destination that is Wilmington, he said. Nonstop routes grew from 9 overall to 29 as the booming market continues to attract interest. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Executive Voice Q&A column that features Mary Elizabeth Bennett. Title, CEO of Make-A-Wish, Eastern North Carolina, age 30, education, BA, public relations and interpersonal organization of communication, UNC Chapel Hill, hometown, Forest City. Those who know Mary Elizabeth Bennett would not be surprised by her success in high school when she set out to be cheerleading captain, student body president, and homecoming queen. She was. In college, when she set her sights on becoming the president of her sorority. She was. I've always liked being a leader, and I love people, so I think that's all come because I like to inspire, but also just genuinely get to know people and get to know what makes them tick, Bennett said. When Bennett moved back from a job in Boston, she knew she wanted to work for Make-A-Wish, a nonprofit that serves children with critical illnesses. She started as a volunteer manager in 2018, then served in a few other roles before leaving in 2022, but her heart remained with the program. She returned as Vice President of Development in 2023, where she led a $3.2 million fundraising strategy, a 15% cash jump from fiscal year 2024. In June, Bennett stepped into the role of CEO. At 30, she's the youngest in chapter history to hold the position. Since its founding in 1986, the Eastern North Carolina chapter has granted over 4,600 wishes, with 306 kids on the wait list. This year, the goal is to reach 230 children throughout the 49 counties east of the line between Orange and Alamance counties. How did you first get involved with Make-A-Wish? My cousin was a Wish kid, and my cousin's story taught me that life is too short to not do what makes you happy. When I was working in tech sales in Boston, I was miserable, and people would tell you not to quit your job after 6 months, like that's frowned upon. But I'm also a bit of a risk taker and decided to do that and set my mind on filling my cup. How can you grant a record 230 wishes this year? Working together as a team, transparency, and showing our community the data, we serve all 49 counties in Eastern North Carolina. All of our children come from Eastern North Carolina, which a lot of people don't know. What is your fundraising goal for the fiscal year? We jumped to $3.2 million this year. We're closing out the last 2 months of our fiscal year and tracking very well. However, our biggest event of the year, Wish Ball, our signature gala, is August 7. So we have our highest fundraising goal yet for that event. We moved it this year. It's in downtown Raleigh. We're so excited. Our goal is $775,000. Is there a certain wish you've granted that stood out to you? I always tell people, and I mean this, the wish we're working on currently is the most important wish to focus on. We're working on a lot, but every kid deserves their own day, and that is their own day, and every wish is truly unique and special in its own way. And we'll go ahead and stop there. She mentions in the last couple of questions that her top priorities are the budget and the 230 wish goal, and also her key lesson was that you never stop learning, and that's led to her success. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138.